I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. Hello, this is Vic Cohen broadcasting live. Yes, it's live from Skid Row Studios in stunning downtown Los Angeles. It is just a beautiful, beautiful Los Angeles evening here. The name of the show is It's a Fair Question, because on this show, you know, every question is a fair question. There is no question that is ever too personal or off limits. Got that, guest?
Yeah. Okay. I'll be the judge of that, though.
Well, yes, you will, very shortly. If you're new to the show, each episode, we spend an hour with a good friend of mine, someone I've known over the years, someone who interests me, who I think has a fascinating story. And but we do more than just learn about what they do, like their career. Often they do interesting things. It's about really getting inside the person. And I don't mean in a sexual way, because I know a lot of you were thinking that.
Awkward pause. Yeah.
Yes. So tonight, I've got a very good friend. This guy, he is multi-talented. And he is not only in his own right extremely talented and gifted, he's had the great opportunity to work with others who are also quite talented and people you know. And we're going to talk about what he's done, who he's worked with, what got him to where he is in life right now, and some of the challenges he's had to overcome, some of the victories, some of the defeats. I feel like there should be ABC Wide World of Sports music playing.
With the skier falling down and breaking every bone in his body.
You know what I think would be funny? If I took about, I don't know, maybe 50 minutes to just do the introduction. And then say, and let's welcome.
Yeah, there's not enough material.
I'm getting close to that right now. I got to just say it. Damon Jones is on the show. Hello, Damon.
Thank you, Vic. It's great to be here. I'm honored to be here.
Well, you should be.
Yes, I am.
That's nice. I am. That's very gracious of me.
I definitely am.
No, yeah. You know, we've talked a lot about you being on the show. And yeah. Sometimes I have friends and they'll be like, yeah, well, I'd love to do it. And then they're like, no, that I wasn't sure if you were really going to do it or not.
Yeah, man.
I was starting to question
it. This is, I'm popping my podcast cherry.
Really? Never done a podcast?
Never done a podcast. Well, listen to a lot of podcasts.
But never been on. That's a crime.
It's never been right. On, no.
Well, I will be gentle. And I will promise to cuddle after this.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much. I just want communication to be open.
Oh, yeah. I want to tell you, I don't just podcast with anyone.
Okay. Well, that's good.
No, I only do it once a week with someone. And usually okay. A different person. If you'd like to give us a call, by the way, the number is 800-893-9562. Now, Damon Jones, just to be clear, is not the Damon Jones from Galveston, Texas.
Not the one that played for the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Miami Heat.
Right. That is not who we're talking
about.
That
is not. We look very similar.
Yes.
Very similar.
I believe that. I'm saying this.
Very large African-American man that had a very successful basketball career.
And you're kind of a small white man.
Yeah.
Who's having a very successful career.
Smallish, yeah.
Let's talk about your career, Damon.
My career? Which one?
Well, I looked up some of your credits.
Oh, yeah?
And they're pretty interesting.
Yeah.
How many people can say they had a credit on Seinfeld? Not you or me. No, I'm just kidding. But you.
Well, they did, 160-something episodes, so probably quite a few. But
is this right? I wrote you played Watkins.
I played Watkins. The episode was actually one of the funnier ones. I didn't watch the show that much, but the show, that was my first gig in L.A. I just moved to L.A. about a year before.
What year are we talking?
It says 90. Well, it's an interesting story because they hired me four times.
On Seinfeld,
and I kept getting cut. Like I showed up for my first one. This is like 95, and I show up and we're in rehearsal, and Jason Alexander does something, and I just had like two lines, and he does something, makes a choice. Larry David laughs, Seinfeld laughs, and I go, okay, that's great. Let's do it that way. And then we're gonna cut your lines. Mm-hmm. So it's like my first gig, and they cut me during rehearsal. And I was like heartbroken.
But cut
they
were the like, part out. Entirely?
At rehearsal, they cut my part.
So you weren't even on camera?
No, they never even shot it. But, you know, Larry David comes up and goes, I swear, I'll get you in, you know, another show, I promise. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I know how that goes. But they were very nice. Then they actually brought me back the next year shot a little one-line bit with John O'Hurley as Jay Peterman, and that wound up being on the cutting room floor. So I didn't make the episode, but I got paid and everything.
Were you nervous doing either of those jobs? Like,
no, I was so stoked.
Like the one line. Do you remember the one line?
Yeah, it's me and Elaine and Jay Peterman sitting in Jay Peterman's office, and I'm just a coworker of Elaine's, and he's giving her a lecture, and she accidentally shoots him in the eye with a rubber band, and he screams and runs out, and I just look at her and I go, "We are so screwed."
And is that the read you gave it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I could see why you were cast. There was some magic.
Thanks a lot. Well, it was just that I like literally gave it no feeling and dry. I think
so
that
screwed.
Was where the comedy was coming from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, that was cut. And then I auditioned a third time. They kept bringing me back because they were nice.
Wait, now you don't get a credit for that if they cut it out? I guess you can't. It's just what scene.
I still get residuals for like $2.07.
That's weird.
To this day. But anyway, listen, the third time got hired at the casting. They told me I had the job at the casting directors. I was driving home and they called while I was driving home. So we just wrote the part out.
Oh.
And I still got paid for that.
You say you got paid as if you had performed?
Yeah, I got paid like the day rate or whatever.
You got residuals even though you weren't in it?
I got residuals for the first one because they wound up putting me in the diner, like in the booth behind Jerry Seinfeld.
So you were kind of like an extra. Almost.
Yeah, I was an extra in there, but they paid me my daily rate and everything. But then the last season, the third to last episode ever, they brought me back. They gave me a full guest starring role. I played Watkins in what I thought was a really funny bit, which was that Costanza wants a cool nickname. So he's got this plan. He's going to try to get everybody at work and all of his friends to start calling him T-Bone. Because he thinks that'll give him more cred. And he tries at work during a business meeting and it backfires because he orders a T-bone steak at lunch, you know, for takeout. And I say, "That sounds good. I'll have one too." And the boss and everybody goes, "Watkins, you're having a T-bone? We should call you T-bone." And it was a really fun episode and people remember it and everything. But that was like one of my first gigs. It was really fun.
Did you have a lot of lines in that?
Yeah, I was in like three scenes. Not a ton of lines because, you know, there's the show is about those four people.
Were you nervous?
Not really. I was
really like,
I was exhilarating.
But there was no nerves. Like, I don't want to fuck up. You know, I mean, I imagine if you had three lines or three words, that's one thing. But
yeah, it was really fun. And it couldn't have been a more like laid back atmosphere because and looking back, I'm like, well, shit, yeah, if I was making $1 million a week, I'd be pretty laid back too. I'd be pretty happy.
Or you'd be super anxious because that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
but
they were all so relaxed and just down to earth and cool. So it was a great gig. I mean, it was a really cool first gig to have.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, how did you get the audition?
I pestered Mark Hirschfeld, the casting director.
How do you go about? I mean, that sounds very wrong. That's not what you're supposed to do.
Well, I've heard different things. I mean, Mark Hirschfeld, I mean, he was, Lieberman Hirschfeld was the casting office at that time, and they cast a bunch of things, and Seinfeld was their big one. And I actually just kept sending him my headshot, and then I had a friend of a friend call him and ask if I could get 5 minutes in his office just to say hi. And he did, and I came in and just said hi to him and everything, and miracle of miracles, he, like, was so nice and, like, looked at my headshot and all that stuff, and then I just thought, I'm a starving actor, you know, go back to my waiting job. And
were you waiting tables?
Oh, yeah. I waited tables and bartended.
Where were you waiting tables?
On the Santa Monica Promenade.
What restaurant?
Well, it's interesting because we were just talking about Monsoon.
Right.
That place was called, in the mid-90s, it was a place called Renaissance, and it was like a supper club, and it was a kind of a hot club and everything.
And you were a waiter there?
Yeah, I was a waiter there and a bartender, and then the ownership kept changing, and so they kept changing the name of the restaurant, and it would get remodeled and become something else, like Mustard Cafe.
So you came out here as an actor in 95?
Yeah, 95.
And were you acting? I know you're from Texas. Were you an actor in Texas?
Yeah, I did theater at UT Austin. That's where I started doing
theater. Were you a theater major?
Yeah. Theater major, got a BA in theater.
You did live shows?
Live shows, musicals, Shakespeare, everything. It was really fun. UT Austin has a great theater department. It was really, really fun. But I started doing theater in high school, and musical theater and singing and playing guitar and stuff like that. So I did that. And then I got a offer to go study with this guy at the Oslo Conservatory for grad school, which is Florida State's graduate acting program.
That sounds creepy. Some guy.
Some famous guy.
Okay, like a teacher.
Jose Quintero, who is no longer with us, but he was.
You killed him.
Yeah,
with all your wonderful acting.
I killed him. My performances literally put him down.
Your Shakespeare.
No, but he was Florida State's graduate program, and I went out there and.
I didn't know that. Are they known for a good program? Was it him in particular that had the reputation?
It was him in particular and another guy named Jim Wise, who's a really good teacher.
Wait, Jim Wise, the actor we were talking about?
No. Okay. Different Jim Wise.
Not when we were talking about here.
No, I have another friend named Jim Wise.
We were speaking about him prior to this interview.
No, it's a different guy. Different guy. This was a guy that was the head acting teacher. But Jose Quintero was a guy that was like he had directed a bunch of Broadway shows and was known for being Tennessee Williams. Eugene O'Neill interpreter. It was cool. I mean, it was a cool experience. I wanted to study acting.
You wanted to go to school in the most conservative states in the country. So
yes.
You went from Texas to Florida, and then you did a stint in Alaska. Is that right?
Right. Exactly. I went to
Juno Theater Company.
I went to Equatorial Guinea to do some improv workshops. I worked out really well.
Now, here's the deal. If you don't know Damon like I do, Damon comes from a place where a family, where going into theater would not be probably the parents' first choice.
Yeah.
Describe your dad.
Well, my dad is a football coach, a longtime football coach. I actually played for him in high school.
While you were doing musicals.
Yeah, while I was doing musicals. And ironically, he was actually really, when I started like having those awkward conversations, was like, hey, I'm going to skip out of practice early to go to rehearse, you know, Grease. Or Grease or Annie Get Your Gun or whatever the fuck we were doing. I did Fiddler on the Roof when I was a senior.
Nice.
That was really fun. But I started saying, you know, I'm going to skip out of practice, and football became not as much a priority. My dad was actually the coolest one. My dad's a pretty
smart guy.
It's the other coaches. It's the other like redneck coaches that were just like, you need to get your priorities straight, boy. You need to be out on this ball field and practicing.
Do you feel like your dad is a redneck?
No, he's actually not. He's country. I mean, he's from Texas, but
it's a fair question. I hate to ask it.
Hey, I think you've got a show title in there somewhere, Victor.
I'm working it in. Yeah.
No, my dad is actually a really well-read guy. He's got a master's degree. He's a teacher.
Read the TV guide every week.
Oh yeah, No, he does yoga. I mean, he's like 72 years old.
Wow, that's great.
He's got. You know, he's a very virile guy, obviously a football guy, but like, you know, he does yoga now, he meditates. He's a really pretty, he's a seeker. He's like, he reads a lot. He's a very spiritual dude.
Do you attribute your creativity to your father?
A lot. He has a great sense of humor. He's very playful. He loves to laugh. There was always a record on in my house. Always. They had hundreds and hundreds of records.
So that was your influence for music? Because you're also a musician.
There was just always a record on as long as I can remember. And that's to this day, I always have music on. It was all so great. My parents had really eclectic, really cool musical tastes. So my mom had her musicals, her Broadway musicals, and there was a lot of country and a lot of funk and R&B and a lot of hard rock and a lot of old school country and stuff. So, music. It was a very artistic household, you know.
Now I want to get into so much more with you, and I know that not only have you accomplished a lot, which we're going to get into more of that, but you've also worked with a lot of very successful writers and actors in the entertainment world.
I've been pretty lucky.
Yeah. Now you are currently directing a show at the Groundlings.
Uh-huh.
Describe to those listening. And those not listening, you do not have to describe
Well,
to
I'll
them.
Have to just talk louder.
Yeah, that's right. Tell me about the Groundlings. Tell everyone.
Groundlings is a comedy troupe here in L.A. They've been around since 1974, I think they started. And it started with people like Pee Wee Herman and Lorraine Newman and Phil Hartman, John Lovitz, and of course Will Ferrell and people like Kristen Wiig over the years. Lisa Kudrow have all come from there. It is a sketch comedy. It's kind of known now as the West Coast farm team for Saturday Night Live. There's a lot of Saturday Night Live people like Taron Killam, Nassim Pedrad, who are on Saturday Night Live right now that came from SNL, a lot of writers. But it's just, I started taking classes there when I first came out here and I just fell in love with it. I love the comedy, the sketch writing. I'd never really written before. But they have a writing lab and there's a school and I went through the whole school and just loved it.
That kid, you know who I'm talking about, you.
Mm-hmm.
You can come out here like Damon did.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know anyone.
You
right?
can be a recovering Texan. Mm-hmm.
But you didn't have any ins.
I didn't really know anyone. I literally knew no one. I mean, I was that guy that like had everything he owned in the back of his little Chevy Blazer and just drove out here and started crashing on couches and stuff.
At least it was a Blazer, not a Miata. That's kind of impressive.
That's very true. I couldn't afford a Miata.
Well, I was just thinking it was so small.
Yeah.
That it would be, it'd be less stuff you could bring.
That's very true.
But a Blazer.
Yeah.
So the reason I think it's important to just for people to know, like myself who came out here not knowing people, mm-hmm. that this idea that everything in Hollywood is about who you know, while relationships can develop mm-hmm. through professional work, most people I know started their professional career in the entertainment business not knowing anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I know a lot of people like that too. I mean, you know, there is the nepotism thing. I mean, I do see that occasionally.
That's everywhere.
But like, no
not just in entertainment.
Here. No one's from here. Like LA is just like, no one's really, I don't know that many people that grew up in LA. People come here to get into entertainment. So yeah I mean, I agree with you. I think that a lot of people start with really no connections. But
well, I also find that people who have not gotten to where they want or even close to where they want to get who live out here will often fall back into, oh, it's just who you know. And it's
as an excuse to not do anything. Right.
And yes, it can help. But most, like I said, the people that I run into who are successful,
yeah,
didn't know anyone. And like, you know, I've talked about on the show working with Howie Mandel. Mm-hmm. He didn't know anyone.
Right.
No one gave him anything.
Yeah.
No one gave Jay Leno anything.
But you go out and you start doing sets and you start doing stand-up and you start writing and you start getting involved and you start meeting people.
You
and
the do. Ground, it's the ground, about the doing.
It's about the doing, yeah, taking action. And the Groundlings was just that rare thing, I think, for actors in L.A. especially, in that it gave me like a home base. It gave me a home, and I like their philosophy. I like their improv. I like the real positive attitude and the energy of the place. And of course, it had tradition because so many, you know, it'd been around for a long time, and it's a nice space. But they had a structure. They had a program there that was really cool. I liked the school. I liked the teachers. And I was in the company for about 11 years. And now I'm not in the company anymore, but I'm directing shows there. I'm directing a show right now called Groundlings Prom After Party, which runs until July 6th. It's every Friday and Saturday night, but it's just super fun. It's mostly sketches.
Where can people buy tickets?
You can buy tickets at groundlings.com. You can buy them on Gold Star. You can get them at the box office. There's shows there almost every night of the week. There's a Sunday company, which is like our junior company, which is an amazing show. It's every Sunday at 7:30. You know, this show that I'm doing is on Friday and Saturday nights at 8 and 10. There's a Thursday night all improv show. And
I've been to your show, the one you just did, and I try to support all your shows.
Yeah, you've been to a lot of my shows. Yeah.
And I thought your show, I think this one in particular, I mean, I love them all. This one is just jam-packed with funny.
Oh, thanks.
It's such a great show.
It's a really good cast. It's 9 people that I've known. I've known most of them for a pretty long time. There's a couple of real new people, but they're just really good writers. They write a lot. They're very prolific. They just keep trying stuff.
One thing I do want to discuss that. One of the other things that popped in my head just now is Flo, the guy, the progressive lady. Mm,
yeah, yeah.
She's a groundling.
Yeah, that's Stephanie Courtney.
And so you all listening can say that you know one groundling for sure.
Mm-hmm.
She's still in the company, right?
She just stepped down from the company, but she was in about the same years that I was in. I did a ton of shows.
What
with
is
her.
She worth now?
God, I don't know what she's making on the campaign. I mean, shitload, because she is literally every website you open, there's a banner ad, it's on billboards, it's in magazines, it's everywhere.
There's a heavy flow.
There's a heavy flow. No, she's a great friend and like one of my favorite people. She couldn't be a nicer person, but also like ferociously talented, like can sing like a bird, great song improviser. Like just to see her on stage, she's one of those magical people, which I think you can kind of tell she's got that great personality. But yeah, that's been a nice gig for her. But it's always interesting because, you know, something like that, I think every conversation I have about that, I'm like, what else is she going to do? She's so ubiquitous.
Here's what she'll do. First of all,
cash a bunch of fucking checks.
No. If I were her agent,
okay.
If I were her manager,
mm-hmm.
It's very simple. She looks nothing in real life like Flo, the character with the crazy red lipstick and the over-the-top makeup.
Who does? Who doesn't?
She does not in real life, that actress.
Yeah. Oh, Stephanie. Yeah.
She's
yeah,
fine.
They do her up. Yeah.
So I don't think being ubiquitous, she's ubiquitous as this cartoon character.
Yeah, it is kind of cartoony. Yeah.
I mean, I had to do a very, very hard double take, like really analyze to see her in person. And I had the good fortune to see her in one of your shows.
Yeah.
But I don't, she's actually, as opposed to, and this is dating myself a little, Joe the Isuzu guy.
Right. Yeah, who, I remember Joe the Isuzu
guy. He's just Joe the Isuzu guy.
Yeah.
But she's got a whole nother thing going.
She does. And you know, there's actually, you can see somewhere on the internet, like on YouTube, there's, she did an appearance on Mad Men, 2 or 3 years ago, I think right before she got the gig. And she plays a woman like in that old 60s, the phone room, you know, where the operators are and they're like patching calls literally with wires.
Yeah.
And there's three women that are all phone operators for the building, you know, and she's one of them. She's got the kind of the cat glasses on and the hair up in the beehive and she looks phenomenal, but it's her. And you have to do like a double or triple take to see that it's her.
Yeah. She's in the best situation. Now, this is a story that blew me away after one of the shows. You took me up to the green room upstairs. I had a chance to hang out with you and some of the cast that particular night.
Yeah.
And then that night we had Flo there. And we also had another actress.
Mm-hmm.
And this story has never left my mind. It had come down to for the character of Flo between this actress we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Her name again?
Stephanie Courtney.
And another actress in the same exact show. And it was, my memory is it was between the two of them, another lady.
Oh, really? Do you remember who it was?
I think it was the one you and I talked about prior to the show, the one who you said is so hilarious, but she wasn't in this current show.
Okay.
She does commercial.
Blonde, yes, Annie Sertich, probably.
I think.
Yeah, Annie Sertich is one of those people I've worked with a lot, too, and she's in the current Groundling Company, and you see her all over in commercials.
But this is the killer. Imagine.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I could have butchered the story, and I apologize to both you actresses.
If that's true, that's not surprising because she does a ton of commercials. She works a lot. She's a very successful actor. She works a ton and makes a good living. And also just one of those, like Stephanie, is like lights out on stage. Just quick, great improviser, really funny. Also, like my personal preference, she goes very dark. She can get very, very dark on stage, darkly funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I like also, what I'm hearing from you right now is these are people who are talented.
Yeah.
You know, generally people who are talented can really go far. And, you know, there's also this feeling I get amongst fellow actors, comics, that it's all luck and that, you know, it's, they forget talent.
Yeah.
Because there's sometimes a sense of, I think people get jealous.
Mm-hmm.
And they just go, it's just a matter of flipping a coin and, you know, they got
it. Yeah, honestly, Vic, I think it's a combination of both. I don't think it's black and white. I mean, I think you can have talent, but I know a ton of talented people that haven't quit their day jobs and don't do shit.
But
they
most
sit around.
People,
and I've done that before. I've sat around, you know, waiting for the phone to ring, and that's a mistake.
Right,
you know,
but here's what I'm saying is not that those who aren't getting it are talented, are not talented. But those who often are, generally, the most successful people I have found really are talented.
Sure.
Doesn't mean they're necessarily more talented than someone else, but they...
But there's lots of very... people that I don't think are talented that have been very successful and lucky and a combination. But I think it's the people, it's the squeaky wheel gets the grease a lot of the times. I mean, there's people... You can go out there and work your ass off.
Hey, talented doesn't mean necessarily being a talented actor or actress. You could be talented... at selling yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Talent.
Shit, yeah.
There's some talent there.
That's just America.
But, and I'm kind of switching because originally I really was thinking talent, but I'm thinking now I hear what you're saying, but there's another kind of talent involved in those situations.
Well, yeah, there's people that know how to network. I would say that that's something that I really admire in people that I think is one of my shortcomings is the talent to network and not feel like you're schmoozing and be able to ask for what you want and ask people for help and do favors for yourself and put yourself in a position to gain opportunities in the business.
Without looking opportunistic or insincere.
Yes, absolutely. Be able to ask for what you want. And there's people that I know that are able, it's almost like it's I agree with you, it's its own art form. People can be very aggressive and very assertive without seeming like a dick, without seeming schmoozy.
Obnoxious.
Yeah.
Now, you've worked alongside Melissa McCarthy, correct?
Yeah.
How many years had you worked with her?
We got in
the Groundlings.
We started at the Groundlings right about the same time in the mid-90s, but 96, 97.
And she was there 10 years. You were there 11?
Yeah, we were in the company about the exact same window. We were in the Sunday company together and then got in the main company about
Your
the same time.
Your impression of her as an actress?
just unbelievable. She's on stage, just a great improviser. There's, you know, there's good improvisers, there's funny people, there's good actors, but like she's one of the rare people that I think you can count on one hand that goes on stage and just has whatever it is where the audience just falls in love with them immediately.
She has the likability.
Yeah, well, it's just an energy, it's a magic. She's just super smart and funny, but there's just that extra kind of intangible thing. And there's only a handful of people that I've ever worked with that just the crowd, you can feel it.
That you root for her.
Yeah. And she's also just super funny, good writer, and just great energy, and isn't afraid to go anywhere. Isn't afraid to say or do anything.
Have you ever seen her flop?
No, not really.
Come on, Damon.
We worked for years and years and years, and being in the groundlings and writing shows and constantly writing and rewriting, and, you know, it means constantly writing and trying bits, you know, and of course, you know, you put them up and you put them in shows and you do preview shows and sometimes in the main show, and sometimes the audience just isn't with you, and sometimes bits don't work and sometimes they kill. But you keep the ones that aren't working, you keep working them. You keep refining them.
Well, there are some that you think, I would suspect there are some that are completely dead on arrival.
Oh, yeah.
And you just put them to sleep immediately.
Yeah. But, you know, I think what's good about this current show that I'm in is these writers, they write a lot. They're very prolific. And so as a director, I got to look at a lot of different ideas. And that made the quality of the show, I think, better in the end. Because I can only put 15 sketches for an hour and a half show. You know, 15 different sketches. But I think we wrote for about a month. And I think they probably wrote 120, 130 bits that I got to look at.
Yeah.
You know, and I chose the ones that I thought I had promise, and then we just workshopped the shit out of them. And,
well, they were great. I mean, it was, yeah, like I said, from
really
top to
fun
bottom.
And super talented cast. So my job is kind of easy. God, yeah, it's so fun.
If you're going to see a show at the Groundlings Theater, I really recommend this one, and I recommend you doing it soon.
Yeah, the
place
prom
was
after
packed,
party. Yeah.
And the prom after party is the show we're talking about in particular. And I'm not just, you know, trying to prop it up because Damon's here.
But you can.
But it helps.
But
it
is
extra motivation too. But
absolutely.
No, I mean, I really did love it, and I wouldn't be so emphatic about it.
You sat on the front row.
I have a seat that I always sit on.
Yeah, you
it's
always
the best
sit there.
Seat.
Yeah.
I sit next to Larry.
Yeah, you sit next to Larry, the guitar player, while he blasts his Hendrix medleys.
It's great.
In your ear.
I just love being there, you know, he recognizes me because, you know, that's my seat.
Yeah, he recognizes it.
I love that seat.
Yeah.
Right in the front row, far, if you're ever going, it's audience left. That's the best seat
audience
in the front
left.
Row.
Yeah.
You can have your arm actually on the band, the pit. It's not really a pit, but.
You know that Larry Treadwell, the guitarist for the Groundlings band in the pit, he was the guitarist for Thomas Dolby. She Blinded Me with Science. You remember that song?
No.
And he played with Cyndi Lauper. He's so cool. He's like this journeyman guitarist.
He's a nice guy, too.
Laid back dude, but man, he can absolutely shred.
That guitar of his is pretty crazy.
Well, he builds his own guitars. I mean, those guitars are all like Frankensteined things that he builds
cool.
in his shop. Yeah.
Let's talk about Kristen Wiig for just a moment.
Yeah.
Also a fellow groundling you worked with?
Yeah, she was in the Groundlings at the same time I was, and we did a few shows together, and she's somebody I knew for a long time before I even got in the company. We just kind of knew each other from around.
Beautiful in person, always?
Yeah, just super nice and funny and always playful. And
pretty.
Yeah, very pretty.
You never dated her?
No, I never did.
Never thought about it?
No.
Why?
I was always in other relationships. I also, the Groundlings, I kind of just chose not to date within that company. I wanted that place to be, there's a lot of, it gets incestuous as any theater company or
gossipy.
Any company. Yeah, gossipy and datey, and you can date each other and all that stuff.
But isn't that what people do in a theater company?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, isn't that part of why people
think,
get into theater?
But I've been in a lot of theater companies. I've done a lot of stuff, and I've just chose to keep that separate.
It's probably why you're directing. I mean, you know, at some point, you can people get tired of the stuff, you know, like crap of. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, Kristen is an old friend. Actually, she was married for a long time, so during the time I was in the company.
So you got these two. I know that, you know, I don't want to go through the long list because that would be really the whole episode here if we were to talk about everyone you work with.
No, at the Groundlings,
with. So you've got people, and you and I, again, because we're friends, we've talked off mic about this, but I do want to hear your answer here because the question's a little different. You've got these people who, as you've told me, are international film stars.
Mm-hmm.
They're mega, mega successful. They've got the talent.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the talent. Mm-hmm. And but they've got the stardom right now. I say right now because it's an unpredictable world.
Sure.
And how does that sit with you?
It's hard. I mean, it's a mixture. You know, I'm very happy for them, and they're certainly deserving. I mean, Melissa's movie, I think her last movie made like $100 million. And I'm like,
Bridesmaids, you know, just for you, everyone knows. And she, Mike and Molly, just I want to make that clear. Who she
and
is.
Bridesmaids, you know, Kristen and another Groundlings friend, Annie Mumolo, wrote that movie. And I'm like, well, of course. Of course it's a funny movie. Of course it is. I've watched these people kill on stage for years. I mean, it's never been a part of them not having talent. And there's tons of people at the Groundlings now, you know, that I see that I'm just like, God, they could be in any of these comedy movies. I see, because I go to, you know, all the movies. I see the TV shows and I see people on TV. I'm like, I know 10 people that would have been able to make that scene better, that would have made that scene funnier. Do I wish that I was an international film star? I don't know.
I mean, obviously.
You know, I've been lucky because I've been able to make a living. I've been able to sell scripts. I've been able to, you know, I have had an acting career that's kind of phased more into behind the camera stuff. And I've been able to make a living. So I'm comfortable and happy with that. But my, you know, I always want to push further and keep working with the people that I get to work with. But it's fun. Because now, I've been working a lot of gigs with people that I met through the Groundlings. You know, Michaela Watkins and I do a lot of writing now. We've written several scripts together, and she was a Groundling. She was on Saturday Night Live for like a year, and she's great. And these are people that I've met all through there. So, I think there's enough to go around. All I ever wanted to do when I came to LA as an actor was just, I just want to make a living. I want to make a comfortable living, and I want to do what I like to do. I just cannot work an office job. I tried every other fucking job in the world, and it was a miserable failure.
Do you just not have the gene for it?
I just think I'm being in an office, and I just can't stand it. It's ironic now. I spend most of my time writing, you know, for money, but I enjoy that.
But you won't do it in an office.
No, I just can't.
Starbucks.
Starbucks. Yeah, Starbucks coffee bean.
But I'm not, we won't tell you which one.
Yeah.
Because we don't want you bothering
Damon. I'll tell him all of them. I'm doing a world tour.
I have a great joke. I think it's a really funny
joke. I can't wait to hear it.
I can't say it because we've already kind of said the punchline. I'll just say it, but it works on stage where I go, you know, I'm really excited. I just moved into a bigger office. You know, I just went from the Starbucks on, you know, Ventura and Laurel to the one.
Yeah,
and
the bigger one.
Yeah, because that's basically, that's where everyone's working these days.
I do drink entirely too much coffee.
So, as much as I'd like to talk about your coffee drinking, you're not going to derail
me. No, that's
Damon.
Something you're not. That's off limits.
That's show two.
It's off limits.
But let's talk about, I am fascinated by how much you've lost when it comes, this is more of a personal question, your weight.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you when you were what, 400 or 500 pounds?
I was I was big boy's stand-in.
No,
which
you?
Which is weird because I'm a white guy. recently in the last couple of years, I stopped eating sugar and flour and really adjusted my diet because diabetes runs in my family. And I went to the doctor and all my blood work was just fucked. So, I got a diet plan and started doing it and lost about 45 pounds.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I took you out to dinner once before you went on the plan.
Yeah.
And that cost me a fortune.
That did not turn out well for you.
Got to sue you.
That did
but
not.
It was well worth it.
I remember that. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were nailing those. I forgot the mayonnaise. You were very generous.
I forget what they were because I didn't look at them long enough.
It was
right
just a blur.
They went right into my maw.
Well, when it comes to weight, has this been an issue in your life?
Yeah,
in general?
Here's what happened. I mean, I played football all my life. I could eat anything I wanted. I was always an athlete. And then I went to college and literally my first semester, not just my first year, my first semester gained 30 or 35 pounds. And came home for Christmas and I was miserable. I hated where I was and I was living in the dorm. And I was just drinking and eating and just miserable. I hated it. Mainly because I was like, I have to be a business major. I have to be responsible and get a job and everything. I just fucking hated it and gained a lot of weight. And I spent like the next 25 years trying to get rid of that weight. I fought with my weight ever since. And it was just, it was a matter of like portions and the sugar just like affects your mental health like crazy. And I'm very compulsive with sugar. you know, like donuts and cookies and stuff.
You don't drink, you don't need any sugar?
No sugar, no. I eat fruit, which is like sucralose.
But Splenda.
But yeah, I have Splenda. Yeah, in my coffee, I have unsweetened soy milk in my coffee.
Do you feel that sugar was affecting your mood, like depression wise or anxiety wise?
Big time. Big time. Mainly because I would binge on it. I wasn't a guy that, I mean, I was like an alcoholic with sugar. I couldn't just like have one cookie or one donut or one Coke. I mean, I would just keep going and going and going until, you know, I mean, I would binge on it. But yeah, I think my, and you know, I went to the doctor and she's like, it's interesting because you work out and your heart rate and your blood pressure is actually really good, but your blood sugar is that of like a 400-pound man. It's like off the charts.
Your blood pressure?
No, my blood sugar. She's like, it's off the freaking charts. It's nuts. She's like, you obviously literally put so much sugar into your body. You need to like do something about it.
What were you doing? Eating a box of Fruit Loops every morning?
Binging on like donuts, cookies. I was always eating sweets. I was always eating candy.
Emotional eating?
Oh yeah. Just comfort food. I've always been that way. I've always comfort food. You know, so I just, I went and the doctor actually helped me with it a lot.
Did you go to a general practitioner or was this a weight doctor?
This was a general practitioner. This was just getting a physical. This was a few years ago. And then I just got my first physical since that physical like 3 weeks ago. And they were like, wow, you're down like 45 pounds and your cholesterol and everything is down to normal. It was That's quick. Great. But I didn't, you know, flour and sugar are definitely, I miss them, but I found it hasn't been that hard.
Flour? So that's the diet. No flour, no sugar.
No flour, no sugar. And I watch my portions pretty much. I mean, I eat mostly fruits and vegetables and like whole grain. I eat, you know, chicken and fish and stuff. Steak.
Let's talk about the mental state of an artist.
Yeah.
Now, when I'm on a show, when I'm writing and acting on a show, the mood is great.
Oh, yeah, me too. Creative. I'm the same way.
Day the show ends, I'm still exhilarated. Next day, I'm relaxed. It was a great time.
Yeah.
Weekend, I'm having my weekend like everyone else.
Absolutely.
It's a great weekend.
Yeah.
I worked during the week. I'm feeling good. Monday, get up a little later than normal.
Yeah.
And that's when
you start pacing your apartment like
I
do.
Well, I start to forget. Mm-hmm. Like, everything I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And instead of being like there's a rocket under my ass, it's more like I got to really come up with some motivation to get.
Oh, yeah. And I get down like still. I mean, not as bad as when I was eating so much sugar and stuff. But oh, my God. Yeah. I would pace in my apartment and just. And you know what? It's so funny, Vic, because like whether it's you or any other of my friends that are in the entertainment business, it's like actors, writers, directors, whatever, it's like comedians, like this is 95% of what we talk about is our mental state. Are you depressed today? Are you pissed off today?
Are you finding that? You and I aren't the only ones you're talking. I thought it was so
kidding.
Special.
Backstage at the Groundlings, it's like these people, I go and watch them on stage and just get the privilege of watching them do these sketches. And it's so funny. And they make people laugh so hard. And then, but like backstage, we're just talking about our lives and it's just like, why am I so fucking anxious all the time? It's like, well, because you chose a business where, you know, it's 95% unemployment all the time, you know? And it's like, you don't know where your next check is going to come from. Right. And nothing is certain. And it's very competitive. And it's, but it's like, this is what we do, you know?
Do we have some kind of, I want to say death wish? You know what I think it is? Tell me if you agree. A very high threshold for pain.
For anxiety and anguish, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And the odd part for me that I find so strange is that I kind of am wired anxious. I was an anxious kid, although I was very social and fun.
I was too. I still am. I pop my knuckles like crazy. I'm a big knuckle cracker.
I pop your knuckles. Same, not mine.
Which feels a lot better than when I do it.
Yeah.
I'm not very gentle with myself.
Yeah, but I always do it in a nice, delicate way. Mm-hmm. But you would think that coming from that and being wired that way, that I wouldn't be seeking anything that would create or exacerbate that. Right. However, I think it's really more like I'm so used to it. Just go for what I want to in life.
Yeah.
And hey, so I'm anxious. I'm used to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I think we seek drama. I mean, we're kind of we're kind of addicted to drama sometimes. But yeah, I just got to the point where I think when I was younger, I was kind of like, I wanted to be that anxious. I wanted that frenetic energy. But now, you know, it's like, good Lord, you get older and you've been out here for a few years. It's just like, good Lord, I don't have the energy. I just want to work. I just want to do my work. I want to do good work. I want to try to think up funny shit with my friends and hope somebody pays me an obscene amount of money for it.
Well, the challenge, you know, what's...
By the way, what am I getting paid for this?
I paid for your parking. That was $6.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm already in the hole.
Yeah, that was a good deal for me. That was a real good deal for me. I made out like a bandit.
And I got you a water for... that was like a, I don't know, about 89 cents because I got a deal at 7-Eleven, two of those
I will say it is fine water.
It's good Arrowhead water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in the
Arrowhead water, 100% mountain spring water.
So you do voices,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not talking about that one in particular. Your voicemail, your outgoing voice
is spooky.
It's horrible.
Everybody
despise
hates it.
It was funny the first time, but you know, mm-hmm. we get it.
Yeah.
There's no way fucking around it.
I was just
you told me to push a one. Push the number one.
Yeah, you can push the number one. You can bypass it.
He sounds like a creepy guy in a funeral home.
And it's a
hostage situation every time you call him.
Yeah,
because
you
can't figure out how to get around it.
I don't like talking on the phone.
You don't like talking on the phone or getting calls?
Neither.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I like it when you call.
Thank you.
I don't answer, but...
I know you never do. I just assume you're in a funk.
Yeah. And you know what? You assume
correctly. Honestly, I always feel like if you don't answer the phone, you're probably depressed.
I could be on the toilet.
You could be, but I don't mind if you pick up then. Because half the time Did you just say I do?
Was
that a poo-poo joke?
Mm-hmm. That's as good
Was that a duty joke?
Live from the groundlings.
All
those years of paying off.
Nice work.
Do jokes.
I think that as a creative person, I hate to speak for you, but I'll speak for myself. I think that as a creative person, I'm much more sensitive than perhaps
mm-hmm.
maybe others. Although then I think, like you just said, anyone would be anxious when, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. Even, you know, you could be an A-list celebrity and I know guys, you know, they're still freaked out when they're not working. I mean, this mm-hmm. isn't about necessarily where you are on the success poll. I ran into I'll never forget this. I ran into the guy who played Kramer, Michael
Richards.
Yeah.
Right.
This was a long time ago, but it was after Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him about Curb. And I said, you know, what do you think of it? And it was interesting because he came off in his response as jealous.
Yeah.
And jealous of Larry David.
And did he call them all N-words?
No. Because there are no black people on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Well, actually, there is a one, but I don't know if he was there yet.
Yeah.
And that is a reference, if you don't know, to Michael Richards using the N-word in the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, which made it a big star. But I was so fascinated. I mean, he was at that time, and he still is, I'm talking about Michael Richards, Kramer, a zillionaire.
Yeah.
If he's making 100 an episode, 100 grand.
I think in the last season, because I did the third to the last episode, in the last season. And I know that their deal for that year was the three supporting cast members were getting 600 grand an episode.
So,
and they did 26 or whatever.
Plus residuals. And that was one season. He was in many seasons.
Yeah. So, he's
blown
a zillionaire. And
like you're an A-list celebrity mm-hmm. who just got off one of the biggest sitcoms in TV history. Yeah. And instead of being gracious and excited for Larry David, if you don't know, Larry David was one of the creators of Seinfeld who mm-hmm. then went on to create Curb Your Enthusiasm, which he also stars in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was talking to Michael Richards about, mm-hmm. the Larry David series, Curb. And so it just reminded me that it doesn't matter what...
I agree with you, though. It's almost like we, in this profession, it's like we need something to be anxious about. We need something to
I don't know if we
about.
Need it or it just happens
subconsciously,
naturally.
I think we do sometimes.
Well, that kind of scares me. Because it's so self-destructive.
It is self-destructive. We're a self-destructive lot.
I one time went to a therapist. I was talking.
What?
Not just one time, let me rephrase that.
Yeah.
I went to a therapist years ago. I was actually going through a divorce. And I wasn't sure if I was going to get divorced, but I knew I needed to end it. And she was a really great woman, but it mm-hmm. just wasn't, there were certain things that weren't right. And I was explaining to her my angst. And that is the correct way to say that word, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
I was wondering.
So pretentious, but I have to say it the right way and then explain that.
I think it's actually angst.
Is it?
Because it's from the German.
It is German.
I don't know. I'm making it up.
Well, I'll go along with that. It is German. So anyways, the therapist said, Vic, wow, you have such a high tolerance for pain. Like, she was impressed.
Really?
Yeah. And that's why earlier I was saying perhaps we have a higher tolerance for pain.
Yeah.
I mean, that was also a reference to a lot of stuff. That wasn't the showbiz stuff. There were other things in my life. And I think that's true. You have to have not only a thick skin, but you also have to have the ability to not stop.
Yeah.
And under no circumstances. Because half the biggest mistake people make is often not continuing.
Oh, I think, yeah. I mean, and I think one of the muscles you have to develop out here is just be able to process disappointment.
How do you do that?
A lot of cocaine.
Well, that's true. You said nothing about cocaine. You just said sugar.
I lost a lot of weight. Yeah. Yeah. No.
Well, actually,
when by Splenda in my coffee, I meant
Damon does
Colombian
not do cocaine.
Jungle snow. No.
How do you do it? How do you deal with that?
I've tried meditating recently, and you know, it's not too bad, but I'm so fidgety. I'm an anxious guy, and I'm a nervous guy. I'm a knuckle cracker, and like, I can do about 10 minutes. I actually downloaded a meditation app on my iPhone, and it's just a woman and ocean sounds, and you can set it for like 5 to 20 minutes. You can do ocean sounds or the sounds of a stream or sounds of a forest. And then some woman with this unbelievably like quaalude voice going like, simply be, find a comfortable position. And I've done it like 3 or 4 times, and it's just like, I can't wait for the fucking 10 minutes to be
It's over. Painful.
I can't sit still. And like, I just want to go drink coffee and type real fast and think of, you know, dick jokes. And
from that?
Yeah.
So it's working.
Yeah. But it's like meditation. The idea is to try to be still for one small part of the day. And I find it's very difficult for me.
That's what they call a discipline.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it really does take
I really
discipline.
Admire people that can do it. And I can totally see the benefit of it.
What is your discipline when it comes to your writing and creating when you don't have a structured day, when you're not on a show?
I give myself a 3-hour block, and I try to do that in the morning. And I think the time that I write the best in the morning, I get a big old cup of black coffee, just sludge. And I just sit and I make myself type for 3 hours.
And is there an agenda when you start?
There hasn't been. I just finished a script that is going out that I just turned into my agent. And that was like over the last 3 months. So I had that to work on. And I've taken other odd jobs like writing, you know, on shows and promos, and then helping developing this Groundlings show.
Now, we briefly talked about how you do voices. I mean, very briefly. You also are writing music for Looney Tunes.
Yeah, the Looney Tunes show. I worked on that last 2 years. I got to write and perform songs called Merry Melodies for all the characters. And I did that with another Groundlings buddy of mine, Ben Falcone.
What do you mean by for all the characters?
All the characters, like for Daffy Duck. And
they each sing a song?
Yeah, we wrote songs. We probably wrote about 20 songs for each season. So I'm working on the season 2 masters right now for, they're going to release the iTunes album for season 2. On iTunes in June, I think June 25th.
Now, does this mean you own the material?
No, of course not. You know, they own it, but I'll get royalties and stuff.
Well, from what I've read, music producers get rich. People who produce music make a lot of money.
That's what I've heard too.
Now, what's your deal?
I get $5 million.
And it's a fair question. It's very personal. But no, I mean, is this like any, are you, is this as good as writing for Justin Bieber? I mean,
oh, hell no.
Why not? I'm not saying that.
Here's the thing. I don't know.
Financially,
I'm
saying.
I don't know if Justin Bieber writes his own songs, but I know a lot of popular artists don't write their own songs. And there are people that just make a living writing songs.
Right.
No, I think for television, especially for an animated show, it's not as much.
Even if they're going to do an album?
Yeah. And we'll get like literally pennies, I think, per, you know, like per 100 or 1,000 downloads. It's
so like a work
nothing.
For hire.
Yeah, it's like a work for hire thing. And the money, you know, we get like a flat rate. But the songs were so freaking fun to do. And like, they got a lot of cool people to do the voices. Kristen Wiig was the voice of Lola Bunny. Fred Armisen, also from Saturday Night Live, was the voice of Speedy Gonzalez. John O'Hurley, who was on Seinfeld, was.
So where do we get to see this?
It's on Cartoon Network. The show's on Cartoon Network in the second season, but there's tons of stuff up on YouTube. And you
how do people find it?
You can go to cartoonnetwork.com and see episodes, but it's on Cartoon Network. I'm sure. I think it's on Wednesday nights.
What are the keywords to look up here?
Cartoon Network, a Looney Tunes show.
And that would be the new one? They would be automatically?
Yeah, the new one, yeah.
Because Looney Tunes has been around for years.
It's been on for years, but look for the Looney Tunes show.
Okay.
That's what the one on Cartoon Network is called. And then the songs that we do are called Merry Melodies. They're on YouTube. There's a channel, YouTube channel.
You could also look
Cartoon
up Merry
Network.
Melodies.
Merry Melodies, yeah.
Okay. Now, according to your credits, you've also done two voices. I don't know if they've done more, but in particular, I saw Marvin the Martian and Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah, I got to do those voices in the songs. We got to sing a lot on the songs. Ben Falcone did the little chicken hawk guy. And then, yeah, they had a lot of really fun people doing.
Well, let's hear Foghorn Leghorn.
Foghorn, well, I tell you, boy, I ain't no chicken. Listen to me, boy, I ain't no chicken. What you want is a real old-fashioned Alabama chicken right over there. And then he points to the dog, and the dog is sleeping.
Is that the actual line?
I don't know. I was just improvising.
I like that.
We wrote a song for Foghorn called Cock of the Walk.
And can you sing a little?
I can't believe we didn't get censored, but literally I was like, they wanted to call the song Cock of the Walk, or that was our title. And they were like, yeah, I'm like, the censors will never let us say cock for a kid's cartoon, but that's what it's called. It's called Cock of the Walk.
Can't you sing a little?
It's Foghorn Leghorn, just basically doing Johnny Cash, and he just talks. He basically raps.
Your voice is a little raspy tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Is that from work?
It's from doing all the podcasts that I do.
Yeah, right.
I do a tour. I just have a limo that takes me around from podcast to podcast, and I'm just getting real dry.
What about Marvin the Martian? I don't know if I'd recognize Marvin the Martian, but I'd like to hear it.
What? I have a laser beam, and it's pointed right at your planet. So be very nice to me, Earthling. I'm super fun. I'm very misunderstood.
We wrote a bunch of songs for Marvin because he turned out to be a really popular character. And I'm really, I was so stoked to be able to do that voice because it's one of my favorite characters.
So now, isn't that really hard to have to match a voice that's already existed?
Yeah, but, you know, Jeff Bergman is this master voiceover guy, and he does Daffy and Bugs. And yes, which is really hard to pull off.
No,
but he does the voice of each of those characters. And I mean, those are as iconic as it comes. Mel Blanc did all of those.
Right.
And Blanc, that is how
that's
pronounce
blank.
It. It's Blanc.
No, it's Blanc.
It's Blanched.
It's a German word.
Yeah. But
any other voices?
Those are the two that I did. I did a ton of background singing for the tracks and everything. They let us. You know, I have a studio at my house, and so I get to perform all the instruments and write them in the studio and play them.
As a musician?
I've been playing guitar for 25 years.
I mean, are you one of these guys who can play by ear on a guitar?
I can't read music really.
Really? Can you play
well
on a piano?
I can do what they call crabbing, which is I can figure out what the chords are and then play them on a track and do 783 takes until I get it right.
You never taken a music lesson?
No, not on guitar. I took piano when I was a kid and I hated it.
You can't.
But I always I learned to play guitar by listening to records nonstop, sitting around my house, my underwear, playing guitar to old records.
It helps when you're in your underwear.
Yeah.
Why?
It's very liberating.
Oh, I know. I do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't written anything though.
No.
I usually get distracted by myself in my underwear.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All that beauty.
It's, yes.
All the glory.
There is a lot of it.
Yeah.
So you don't know how to write music.
I do know how to write music. I've written a ton of songs,
but
as far as notation, notes on the page,
treble clef, bass clef.
I know what those are, but I can't. My brother is a phenomenal musician that's classically trained, and you can put any piece of music in front of him and he can just play it on guitar, on bass, on a lot of things, but I can't. I just never learned to
do
it.
How do you get through that? We're going to have to wrap it up here. I mean, I'd love to. Yeah. I wish we could continue.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with all the highs and lows in your life, mm-hmm. the different challenges that come with this profession, again, in as brief a way, but specifically, how do you deal with the highs and the lows and the joys and the disappointments?
I just try to take them. Honestly, and I hate saying this, I don't know a better way to say it, but I've tried to just be more positive and just enjoy the good things that I've been able to enjoy, and the Groundlings and my friends and being able to work. and just trying to stay positive, because there's, I feel like this LA is like a nonstop parade of negativity in the business. There's so many reasons to be negative, and there's, you have to find the reasons to be positive. And this is, you know what? I like to do what I do. I like to think up funny shit with my friends and try to get paid for it. And that's a good job. So I'm thankful for them.
And I'm thankful for you, Damon, for our friendship and also for all the creativity and,
thanks,
and for keeping
Duke.
What you do going. And
thanks, man.
Yeah, you're a really special person.
Thanks, man.
I want to thank all of you, too, for listening right here to Vic Cohen's It's a Fair Question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question.